Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. President Donald Trump has said he wants to limit immigration from Muslim countries to America. How did Joseph Smith feel about Muslims? Dr. Paul Reeve answers that question in the next part of our conversation. He's a professor of history at the University of Utah. Let's listen in on our conversation. Let's talk a little bit about Nauvoo. I know there was a letter written in the 1840s where I believe it was the city council, though correct me if I'm wrong, that welcomed the Mohammedans, or what we would today call Muslims. You know, as you talked about that, it seems like Mormons were very accepting of all people, blacks, whites, slave owners, non-slave owners. So that was another reason why the rest of white America didn't like Mormons. But talk about how accepting Mormons were, especially of Muslims and blacks and even Indians and Chinese.
Right. Yeah, so that was one of the things that caused the Mormons problems, especially in the first 20 years or so of Mormonism. They were branded as being too accepting of people that the rest of white America knew should be segregated or even enslaved. So accusations leveled against them, 1830s up through the 1840s, they have opened an asylum for rogues and vagabonds and freed blacks. They are walking, missionaries preaching in the South were accused of conspiring with Indians and walking out with colored women. In Missouri, they were charged with actually promoting black ascendancy over whites, that they would elevate even whites, blacks above whites. That's how open they were. There's actually a British officer, Edward Strutt Abdy, who's on tour of the United States in the 1830s from Britain. He's here to study American institutions, and he returns back to Britain and he writes a three-volume book about his journey in America. And in this three-volume book, he actually says he comes across a copy of the Book of Mormon produced by this new religious sect in America. And he reads it. And he actually points out the verses in Second Nephi 26, where it says, "All are alike unto God, black and white." And he said, Mormons have this radical vision of racial equality, and it's going to get them in trouble, especially in the state of Missouri. That's how radical their vision is. And he points to the Book of Mormon as evidence of this and says, they're not going to last long because of their open racial vision. So those are the accusations leveled against them by outsiders. That's one of the things I tried to do in the book was a lot of times a Mormon racial story has been told only from the inside perspective. And I was interested in, well, what are outsiders saying about who Mormons are and how they behave racially? And it was really fascinating to then come across these accusations being leveled against the Mormons that they are too open and too inviting of all people. And like you mentioned, then in Nauvoo, when they write their vision of religious equality, they simply say, everyone's welcome to worship in Nauvoo. We don't discriminate. There's no religious discrimination. And there's a whole long list of Christian denominations that are welcome in Nauvoo. The only non-Christian group mentioned were Muslims, and they simply say, yeah, and we welcome Muslims here as well, right? So Joseph Smith was branded as an American Muhammad very early on in his religious career, and yet he is open and accepting of Muslims into his religious community in Nauvoo, and simply says religious freedom should be for everyone. An attack against religious liberty against one group is an attack against all groups. And so we should be at the forefront of defending religious freedom and religious liberty.
That's cool. So in your book, you also, I think you spend a chapter both on Native Americans as well as on Chinese. Can you talk about some of the comments, I guess, from outsiders that had problems with those two groups?
Sure. So obviously Mormons have a bit of a theological distinct understanding of who Native Americans are, fallen descendants of ancient Israel. Mormonism is founded in 1830, the same year that the United States passes the Indian Removal Act, which simply stipulates that Native Americans east of the Mississippi are to be rounded up and removed to Indian country designated west of the Mississippi. That's supposed to solve the Indian problem, simply round them up, get them out of the way of white settlement, and let whites simply fill in the land where the Native Americans had been living. So that's what's going on in the U.S. And then Mormonism comes along and says, well, we have a new book of scripture, and it purports to be a history of this group of people. They actually have a divine destiny. And this is not set well with a lot of the American population. So Mormons will be accused of conspiring with Indians against true white Americans, with intermarriage amongst them, which they in fact do engage in. They have no problem about intermarrying amongst Indians, and by the time they arrive in Utah Territory or in the Gray Basin, Brigham Young will actually encourage missionaries amongst Native Americans to take Native American wives. But the earliest interracial marriage that historians are aware of is actually a Native American man and a white woman in Nauvoo, sealed together in Nauvoo. So very open in terms of their attitude, and actually see a divine destiny for Native Americans, and actually believe that Native Americans are going to convert in mass to Mormonism and join with Mormons in ushering in the millennium. Now, really naive in their vision of this kind of way that they perceive Native Americans to embrace their message, because it never happens the way that they had hoped. But nonetheless, they do have this vision of uniting with Native Americans and sort of strength in these sort of marginalized groups coming together. But in the minds of outsiders, that's just evidence that Mormons are attempting to conspire with Native Americans to wipe out the rest of white America. And so there are all kinds of really heightened kind of rumors that circulate. Mormons have thousands of Indians at their behest. They're just the Indians are just waiting for the signal from their Mormon overlords to go on the war path and wipe out the rest of us. And so the way that it plays out, I mean, Mormons are sometimes then branded as more savage than the savages. They're described sometimes as white Indians, white people who have actually given themselves over to savagery. And because you have, you know, denied your racial identity, you actually sink to a level of depravity worse than the Native Americans, was the argument. And so Mormons become worse than the Indians who they go to live amongst, some of the accusations leveled against them.
Hmm. And then you had a chapter, I know, on the Chinese. I guess the Chinese helped build the railroad. And at first, it seems like Mormons embraced the Chinese, and then I believe it was the 1880s or so, they said, well, we want to become more white, so we'll push the Chinese away. I wondered if you could talk about that.
Yeah, so Mormons are also conflated with Asians, Muslims, Turks, Chinese, and the fear was that Mormons represent a second Oriental problem on American soil. So some actually argue that Mormons will combine with the Chinese immigrants, and you have them mixing together and creating this, once again, Oriental problem that shines in the face of democracy, right? Democracy is for the white race. The yellow horde isn't capable of democracy. Mormons are a version of Orientalism because they're practicing polygamy. They're giving their free will over to despots. In all of those ways, the argument was that they're more like Chinese than they are like white Americans, like Anglo-Saxons, and therefore they are suspect. The same Congress that passes the Chinese Exclusion Act also passes the Edmonds Act. And newspapers across the nation argue that America has now solved both Oriental problems. Some of them say, well, the Chinese should be allowed to stay, but the Mormons are the ones that should go. So they are conflated in editorials across the nation with the Chinese problem. There's the Mormon problem, and there's a Chinese problem, and we're trying to solve both Oriental problems at once.
Okay, so just to, some people might not be familiar with the Edmonds Act. Can you talk about what was the Edmonds Act?
The Edmonds Act was a piece of legislation passed in 1882. Like I said, the same Congress that passes the Chinese Exclusion Act, and they are debating these within a few weeks of each other, which defines a new crime, unlawful cohabitation. So the problem up to this point legally, at least in the mind of Congress, was that they had outlawed polygamy in 1862, but were not very successful in actually convicting anyone because it's very difficult to prove that a plural marriage has taken place. Mormons aren't leaving paperwork hanging around, and so how do you actually prove that there has been a plural marriage that has happened? So Congress in 1882 simply defines a new crime, unlawful cohabitation. No longer then do you have to prove that a marriage has taken place. You just simply have to prove that a man has unlawfully cohabited with more than one woman. And that will lead to the conviction of over 1,000 men and some women, and really ratchets up the pressure on the Mormons. And so that law passed really quickly in conjunction with the Chinese Exclusion Act, leads to these conflations of solving both Oriental problems.
And so cohabitation is just a euphemism for sex, right?
Yeah, or, I mean, you didn't have to prove that sex had happened. I mean, if a man spends the night with one wife, so the marshals might hang out side of wife number one's house, and then the next night with, or another time with another wife, that's cohabiting. They didn't have to see sexual relations happening. They just simply have to prove that they're cohabiting. Now, the Mormon response to this is, well, are the marshals following our good senators and congressmen around and following who they're cohabiting with, right? Is this being applied equally? And obviously the answer is no. It's being applied exclusively towards the Mormons. But nonetheless, that opens up for the prosecution of and conviction of Mormons under the unlawful cohabitation.
Huh, that's interesting. So adultery was just fine as long as you were not
Mormon. Right, right. Yes.
All right.
So in terms of Mormon attitudes towards Asians, that was a part of your question. So very early on, Brigham Young sends missionaries to China. There's simply a desire to convert them. There's no kind of racial restriction. They're also welcomed in. The problem is they just don't have much success, very little success, and the mission to China runs into the Taiping Rebellion, so there's political turmoil going on, and the missionaries themselves complain. There's the language barrier. There's no one that wants to listen to them. They return rather quickly. There are some converts in Hawaii and also some proselyting efforts amongst Chinese immigrants in California. By the 1880s, when you have the actual Chinese presence in Utah, Mormons don't really make an effort to missionize amongst them when they're right here. And I think by that point, they're fully aware of the way that they've been conflated with the Chinese, and I think there's more this effort at claiming whiteness for themselves, and sometimes that means distancing themselves from the other suspect groups to make the distinction because outsiders are making the conflation, so Mormons attempt to create distance.
Thank you for listening to our conversation. We hope you come back for part four of our conversation as we learn of how Brigham Young reacted to the first black converts in the church.
And so Brigham Young is on record in March of 1847 as favorably aware of a black priest holder.
It's going to be a fun discussion. Please come back and listen again on iTunes or other podcast application. I'd also like to invite you to support our work here at GospelTangents.com. You can do this by purchasing a transcript for just $3 at Amazon.com or our website, GospelTangents.com. Thanks again for your support. We appreciate you listening.